another edition of Raptors Rerun. I am JD Bunkus. He is Ben Ennis. Today, Raptors Bucks, Game 5. They say a series doesn't start until a team wins on the road. And so this series starts in Game 5. And I think that Raptors fans, if we just start with anxiety level, it's already, get it out of the way. It's a 10. Everybody's freaking out. Everybody wants to know what's happening. I will say, though, that I do remember going into this game more with the mentality that I wasn't as anxious as the other two games. Like, there's just something about being level that's different than being behind, obviously.
Not only that, is that, okay, so the Raptors are underdogs going into this series. They lose the first two games in the fashion in which they do, especially game two. You escape in game three, and then you come up with that performance in game four. But still, like, it's more like an outsider's perspective, and of course it's different if you're involved emotionally with one of these teams, but like a neutral would have said, all the pressure in the world is on the Milwaukee Bucks.
Of course.
They have to restore order, win on home court, and then either try and steal it in Toronto or just, you know, accept the fact that it's going to be winner take all game seven, and they've got home court advantage. That's what the regular season was about. The pressure has totally shifted. They've lost back-to-back games only like once during the regular season, never lost three in a row. Everything is coming crashing down on the Milwaukee Bucks. It's more about them than it is about the Raptors in this game.
Well, especially when you consider that through the Raptors fan lens, right? Milwaukee, like, Raptors escape with that game three. And like we said, when they finished that game three and Kawhi's hobbled, you're thinking, wow, this series could easily get out of hand. The Raptors could easily be down 3-0. The flip side of that is that even heading into this game, the Raptors have led for the vast majority of the series. Like, they blew game one. They've blown game one, and the Bucks blow them out in game two. And game three, even though it ends up going to double overtime, the Raptors lead that game almost wire to wire, right? Like, the Bucks end up getting a lead, I think it's what, in the fourth quarter?
In the first overtime, I think it's their first lead since 2-0.
Right, exactly. So the Raptors, for the vast majority of the series, have been leading. The Bucks have just come up in some bigger moments. And yeah, if not for Kawhi's leg, and if not for the meltdown that is that fourth quarter against Milwaukee in game one, it could conceivably be Raptors up 3-1 in this series. So I think, yeah, if you're a Bucks fan and you're looking at this, like you just said, as a neutral, the Bucks are the ones that are a little bit more on tilt. And you see that because immediately Malcolm Brogdon is put into the starting lineup. So now you've seen, after all the Raptors discussion about whether they were going to make a move, who was going to get desperate, the first sign of desperation is by Mike Budenholzer. And it's story of the game time. I'm really torn in this one. I don't know about you. I think there's two massive stories.
Three.
Well, sure. Yes, you're right. There are three. I just think in terms of story of the actual game, it's Nurse versus Bud 1. You have it as, how do you power rank it? I have it as Nurse outcoaches Bud by a hair over Kawhi's 35, turning the tide in the third and fourth quarter. And honestly, then Fred VanVleet's 7-3 performance.
Yeah, I have it. The story, number one overall, giant takeaway. And okay, you can quibble because Kawhi and Fred are just so good offensively in this game. But it's the Raptors' defense in the fourth quarter. It's the Raptors' incredible, incredible defense. They're swarming defense. The inability for the Bucks shooters to hit threes and for the Raptors to just like basically abandon the perimeter. And they're like, you know what's going to make defending Giannis a lot easier? If we have literally like five guys just surrounding the paint. And they do an incredible, incredible job on him defensively in the fourth quarter, allowing Kawhi to do his incredible one-on-one isolation stuff, allowing Fred to hit his career high in threes. It's the defense, though. None of this happens without the incredible defense the Raptors display, especially in that fourth quarter.
The thing is that I put that under Nurse, because clearly it's personnel. The Raptors have the right personnel to execute that game plan, but this is Nurse's best game of the playoffs. It's just, to me, unquestionable. This is the first time all playoffs where I think coaches hurt you a lot of times. Coaches help you, but we either overstate it a lot of times with coaches because of an inbound play, right? Like, you're Brad Stevens, and of course Brad Stevens is a good head coach, but he draws up one pretty inbound play. It goes around Twitter forever, and then he becomes the genius, right? He's the genius. I think a lot of times, mostly, coaching is the byproduct of terrific talent. And sometimes there are cases where you need to have that switch in coaching, right? You need to go from the Mark Jackson to the Steve Kerr. and it does become a huge difference maker. But for the most part, it's about, like any sport, getting out of your own way, not making the big mistake, not coming up with a moment where you get too emotional and you either pull a guy too early, or you go with the wrong group for too long, you employ the wrong offensive strategy, or probably the wrong defensive strategy. Nurse just pitches a perfect game basically from start to finish in this game. Like, this game starts and the Raptors just, like, they can't get anything going. They're terrible. Oh, they have four quick turnovers. Siakam gets into two fouls, and I think that kind of changes the game because, okay, again, coaching is so much of what you do on the fly. And if you remember, do you remember when we were doing these Raptors rerun podcasts? I had one moment in the Sixers series. I think it was after game 3 where I was really critical of the way that Nurse or the thing that I said that he's not as good at with when it comes to him versus Dwayne Casey is feel for the rotation and feel to go to which guys win. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Vaguely. I'm sure vaguely. I remember my bad takes more than I remember anything else. So, and I don't even think that was a bad take at the time. I just don't think that it's an unfair one because Dwayne Casey was really, really good at that. But that foul to Siakam forces Nurse to go to Norm. And they don't have OG, so there's no backup four. It's something that we've discussed earlier in the playoffs. And
it's
a bad
foul also, by the
yes,
way.
Yes, it is.
Offensive foul, it's a bad one.
It is a bad foul. But either way, it puts him in this situation where he has to go small versus this long and big lineup. And at first it looks bad because, like, Lopez is scoring inside and the Raptors have to call a timeout. And they're down, I think it's 14-2. And everybody on the Bucks is going. Like, Bledsoe's going. Like, Brogdon is going quickly. Giannis is getting to the free throw line even though he's missing them all. But then all of a sudden it starts to show hope. Like, guys start hitting shots. Guys start moving the ball a little bit more. The Raptors, like, instead of what happened in game 2, which is they just get wrecking balled and they don't have that pushback, they have a pushback. And Kawhi hits some shots. But really the thing is that Nurse ends up playing hot potato with the lineup for the rest of the game. Like, he starts those first couple minutes with the Raptors starters, and he opens the second half with the Raptors starters. But in the first 14 minutes of the game, these are lineups that he used. Norm plus the starters. Kyle and Siakam plus the bench. Two bigs with Norm and Kyle and Fred. Then he goes to the starters plus Fred. And the starters blow it again. There's an 11-2 run at the start of the third quarter. And so Nurse just immediately slashes that out and goes to Fred VanVleet and Norm for Siakam and Danny. And
no,
it's working.
He's the math scientist in this game.
Exactly. It's just working. Everything he's touching works to gold. And what happens? He goes even smaller. He goes to the Serge, Kawhi, Norm, Kyle, Fred VanVleet lineup. And that's when Fred starts nailing threes because he's wide open because there's other shooters. And when Kawhi Leonard is creating, it allows them to have him open on the perimeter who's being left. Like, the Bucks are trying to do the same thing where they're packing the paint against Kawhi. It just doesn't have the same effectiveness because, A, Kawhi Leonard can knock down threes, and he does it beautifully. At one point, he's 5 of 7 in this game, and he knocks down two of them in the eye of Mr. Lopez. But just, it all leads together into this group where the Raptors have much better floor spacing around Kawhi Leonard versus this group. All of their small guys, I think the key to them is they can all defend up, right? Like, Fred, Norm, and Kyle are all undersized for their position, but none of them are poor defenders for their position. Like, it's not an Isaiah Thomas situation or a Trae Young situation where one of those guys gets hemorrhaged. They're all plus defenders. And it gives the Raptors some cushion throughout the game. And then Nurse brilliantly shuts down Giannis Antetokounmpo with the, at some point, just throwing four guys at the rim and forcing the other guys to beat him. And it leads into Eric Bledsoe, who started hot but closes horribly. It's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful Nurse game. He's brilliant in this thing. Mad scientist, perfect way of putting it.
No, yeah, he just sees who's hot. He sees what's happening. He understands that he's got a plan, but that plans can go to waste when you get into the moment and you see what's actually happening in the game. And Fred plays more minutes than Pascal Siakam. He played 37 minutes. Pascal plays 36. And yes, part of it is taking the two quick fouls, not even 2 minutes into this basketball game. But yeah, he sees, hey man, the bench was so brutal early on in the postseason, but it's a different time now, and the bench is what's carrying you, so you better keep riding it, and he does.
Yeah, no, it's a, and I say the dichotomy of this game too, because it feels like Budenholzer can't really find a lineup, and there's so many times where it's just his offense is running really cold, but it's highlighted by this decision at the end of the game by Budenholzer, which is to me, this is where the game was won. So I'm kind of jumping ahead, but okay, like, we can I will just say that
I want to debate you on it, but go ahead.
Well, it's the dumbest thing that's ever happened in the history of professional sports. That's
two things can be true. Two things can be true. It can be the dumbest thing in the in the history of professional sports that the about to be MVP rolls his little ankle, but not so much that he has to leave the game and can't return. He never leaves the scorer's table.
No.
Stands there for 30 seconds with a minute 12 left in the basketball game in a 3-point game, and then comes back without a timeout being taken. It is the most insane moment and most insane coaching managerial decision in all of pro sports, but you can't say it cost them this game. Because
I do.
Middleton scores. Okay, so it cost them 1 point, right? Because Gasol gets the rebound, but he only goes 1 of 2 from the line.
Yes,
so
but listen. That's the whole point. It would have been a 2-point game. And guess what? If Giannis is on the floor, first of all, I don't know if that offensive rebound goes to Gasol. I don't think it does.
But you're taking away 1 point.
Yes, I am taking away 1 point. But there's now only 34 seconds, Ben. There's only 34 seconds left in this ball game. Like, it completely shrinks the clock. It's, first of all, he doesn't get that rebound. It's a 2-point game. And maybe they're breaking out in transition with Giannis on the floor. They miss him for the entirety of an offensive possession, which, sure, Middleton scores, but they don't have him for defense for two. So it allows Kawhi Leonard to get the shot up, and it allows Marc Gasol to get the rebound. You know who I want on the floor with 23 seconds or 34 seconds left to get a rebound? Giannis Antetokounmpo. This actually reminds me so much of the way that the Spurs lost their NBA championship against the Heat. When Ray Allen gets the corner 3-point shot, he gets it because of an offensive rebound because there's no Tim Duncan. It's like, this guy had 23 freaking rebounds. Play him. Put him on the goddamn floor. It's absolutely where they lose the game. And then, Brogdon dribbles it off of his foot. Yeah, and so that's the game ceiling play. But they would have still needed a 3-pointer against
They could have taken the quick two and then, hope that they could only get it into Siakam and play the foul game. And while the Raptors were incredible from the line in this game, I don't know, that you extend the game. Yeah.
So you just think where the game was won is Brogdon dribbles it off his foot and that's it?
I actually have it before that. Like it's a sequence in the fourth quarter, and it's when Giannis is still in the game. Kawhi misses the three. So Brogdon alley-oop to Giannis makes it a 1-point game. You're like, uh-oh. Kawhi misses the three. Gets his own rebound, though. Incredible moment. Gets his own rebound. Giannis pushes him out of bounds. He makes both free throws. It's a 3-point game. And then Giannis takes the ball up the court, and he's quadruple-teamed. He has no choice but to pass it out to somebody. Guess who he passes it out to? Eric Bledsoe misses the three. To me, it gets a little closer, and there's – if you really want to put a definitive point on it, you can say the Brogdon dribbling it off his leg really does seal it. And also Kyle not getting the intentional foul called while he's clearly just dogpiled on, and Siakam gets the wide open – dunk, although maybe Kyle makes both free throws either way.
I think the most consequential play is the Gasol offensive rebound by far, because it's
only one point.
It completely changes.
And it's only a one possession game still at that point.
That one point is huge. It changes completely what they're able to do on offense. The whole team is designed around a guy who is brilliant at getting to the basket and scoring a two. What have the Bucks done? The Bucks did the same thing when they were down against the Raptors and they forced that overtime period. They're down two. It allows them to go to Middleton, who scores at the basket. How did Middleton score on the play before it? It's a two. It's a much higher degree difficulty shot. Like, we're talking about dropping 20 percentage points, essentially, on what kind of a play you're going to be able to draw.
No, I know.
It's a massive play.
A play for two. But yeah.
Great. You're getting into a free throw battle, and then you're even lowering your percentages in terms of what you can do with a 3-point shot. It's crazy to me that this ends up happening. And it's just why to me the story of the game is Nurse versus Bud, is because the biggest plays in the game are what the coaches do in moments of adversity. And Nick Nurse comes up with great moment after great moment, whereas Budenholzer chokes. He chokes. He doesn't call a timeout. He takes Giannis out of the game. They're like not even talking. It's like you said it. Giannis is just at the scorer's table. It's just like, what are you doing? He has too many points in the series. Like, think about the way Nurse starts this fourth quarter. Kawhi Leonard is red hot, and what usually happens? Kawhi usually gets his rest at the beginning of the fourth quarter. That's almost tried, tested, and true. But the Raptors are in a do-or-die game on the road in a playoffs. And so he plays Kawhi Leonard because he's playing brilliantly to start the fourth quarter. A guy who's had too many minutes throughout the playoffs and who's, you know, still dealing with a leg injury. And what happens? Kawhi still plays well. Kawhi still has like game-shifting moments in the early parts of the fourth quarter. Like his end of third and his start of the fourth is really when this game swings into the Raptors' favor, because that's when he starts to dominate. And that's why it's hard for me not to put Kawhi as the story of the game. It's just like, Kawhi's brilliance is almost routine at this point. Do you feel that way? Like he's got 11 times in 17 games where he has 30 plus points. Like that's so stupid. And it's just kind of one of these things where you almost are like, well, it's Nurse versus Bud. It's not Kawhi who scores 35 and nails two threes in Brooke Lopez's face in like one of the most critical moments of the game.
Yeah, that's my favorite moment.
Right, mine too. How could it not be? There's a stretch in this game, in that period from the end of the third and beginning of the fourth, where Kawhi Leonard has 17 of the Raptors' last 20 points. He is the story of the game. It's just a little bit more fun from a narrative standpoint to push Nurse over the top when so many games have just been Kawhi dominating.
Yeah, he has 15 points in the fourth quarter. But yeah, that moment where they're down two, just, and you can see the wheel spinning in Brook Lopez's mind that this is not good. One-on-one with Kawhi Leonard, it's not where you want to be. And he's gapping him a little bit. Three over his head, gives the Raptors the lead. And then Bledsoe misses the elbow jumper and right back. Same matchup. And Norm comes over trying to set a screen, and Kawhi's like, what are you doing? You just saw what I did to this guy last possession, right? And then Norm backs off, and it's just another soul-destroying three over top of Lopez, and it's a four-point game at that point. Yeah, Kawhi was just out-freaking-standing in that final quarter.
Yeah, and so the last guy that we didn't hit on for stories of the game, because I think that in a way, Van Vliet becomes the number two story of the playoffs, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Because it's obviously one is Kawhi, but two, the rest of the way is Father Fred. It's how hot Fred Van Vliet gets and how he changes the ceiling of this game and of this team. And you mentioned how many minutes he plays in this game. Again, Nick Nurse, trusting a guy. He goes deep with Fred Van Vliet into the fourth quarter as well with Kyle Lowry on the bench. Like he's really, really trusting Fred Van Vliet in this game. And why, again, it's a really, really brilliant Nick performance. But I don't think Fred is actually back in this game because he's hesitant early on, where he's kind of like passing up some opportunities. He doesn't go at Lopez despite being 2-of-2 at some point when he keeps drawing Lopez as a defender. Until the Raptors are in this small ball lineup where after hitting another big three, he drives on a fast break and he tries this fadeaway runner from the baseline that's in the third quarter that hits the very top of the backboard. Do you know the play I'm talking about?
Yeah, he shot it from behind the backboard.
Right. That's the play where I knew Fred Van Vliet was actually back. Like at that point in the game, he has returned. It's like, okay, Fred, the whole thing with you was confidence. And now you're feeling yourself to the point where you were passing up like open looks in the playoffs. You were grazing front rim on wide open 18 footers. And now you're willing to shoot runners over Pat Connaughton from behind the backboard. Lord love you. So yeah, a lot of his threes are feet set wide open. And a couple of them are when Kawhi Leonard ends up finding him again. A reason why Kawhi is brilliant in this game is all of the assists he has, how much he's creating for others in this game. But the seventh three that Fred Van Vliet hits is just an unbelievably clutch shot. And he deserves all the credit in the world for it because Brook Lopez has just hit his first three of the game. It's the fourth quarter. There's like a little over 2 minutes left. And that, yeah, it's tied at 93. And that Bucks building is popping off. And Gucci Man is doing whatever he's doing on the sidelines. Going up and down. And Gucci Fred Man. Fred just steps into a three and nails it. It's his seventh three of the game. And he adds good defense to it. Again, he plays above his size. He's making plays. And yeah, he knocks down all his threes. He's wide open and he knocks them all down except for, I think, what, two?
Yeah, he was 7 of 9, but one of those threes was a heave at the end of the third quarter. So it's really 7 of 8 from three in this stupid game. And he's the team high plus 28 in 37 minutes. Is that something you're interested in?
I think it's pretty damn good. It really propels, too, not just the narrative of Fred VanVleet, not just the hot streak of Fred VanVleet, but I think it plants the seed in Nick Nurse's mind's eye that now he can go to what is his ideal lineup, which is the two-point guard lineup. Danny Green has not been very effective in the playoffs. He's not effective in this game. Again, like, he really, this is a very another forgettable Danny Green performance. He doesn't even play 16 minutes. And it really shows Nick Nurse that the path for the Raptors championship is going to go through a closing five that will generally, or a primary five that will generally include Fred VanVleet. It even bleeds into the following season where Fred VanVleet becomes a starter for the Raptors. Like, this is the beginning of that.
Yep. Yeah, he's a guy that you think maybe should be replaced by Jeremy Lin to the second best player on an eventual championship team, getting an NBA Finals vote.
Yeah, Finals MVP vote. Unbelievable. Take that age the worst. For me, it's simple out of this game. And it's not from this game. It's just that it gets solidified from this game, which is the Raptors settled for Nurse after being passed on by Bud.
Oh,
and we've brought this up before. We've discussed this before, but that really was the overwhelming take in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And it was firing Dwayne Casey was a polarizing move. You and I both thought it was the right move at the time, especially considering we didn't think there was going to be a massive Kawhi Leonard trade. You thought that the Raptors were going to run it back because there was no LeBron James, but they meet with Coach Bud in hopes that he's the head coach of this team. He was the team's first choice, and he chooses to go to Milwaukee. And it's viewed as, well, you know what? That makes sense because Budenholzer has always wanted to coach Giannis Antetokounmpo. In fact, the Atlanta Hawks really wanted to draft him and were hoping to draft him that year. Although I feel like everybody was hoping to draft Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, how many franchises have that story, do you think?
Sure.
Like, oh, well, if it would have just gone two more picks, he was our guy. It's like, okay, sure. If you thought he was Giannis Antetokounmpo, you would have moved heaven and earth to trade up to the 15 spot to acquire him. You know, like, I don't think that's a reasonable one too many teams can lean on. But yeah, Budenholzer has a really terrific season. And Nick Nurse's is great too, but Bud is the coach on the top team, and they're playing this style that's all around one great player. And there's a take that lasts throughout the entire regular season, which is, would Mike Budenholzer have chosen Toronto if he had known Kawhi Leonard was coming? And if you also had Budenholzer and Kawhi Leonard, how different would this season be? And in this game, Nick Nurse, who is oftentimes known for being emotional and reactionary, turns out to be the one who picks this game, who plays it beautifully, who's playing it like, yeah, just freestyling it, and Budenholzer's the one who chokes. And I said it, you get known for when you hurt your team, and Budenholzer chokes in this game, and Nick Nurse comes up big. And yeah, the Raptors are NBA champions, and Nick Nurse is playing guitar with the Arkells and doing Fisherman's Friends commercials. Like, he's a superstar here.
I'm ashamed in looking back in how many times I compared Nick Nurse to David Blatt. Like, a lot of times. A lot of times, because that's what it felt like, right?
Yeah.
It's like the Cavs go out and get David Blatt, and they're like, oh wait, we're getting LeBron? Yeah. But still, oh yeah, I guess David Blatt for a bit, but then not David Blatt, because, yeah, you know, David Blatt ain't it. That's kind of what it felt like. It's like, okay, we can't just throw DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry overboard, but we got to do something here. We can't possibly run this thing back and believe the results are going to be different. So they fire Casey and they get rebuffed on their first choice. So they just, yeah, they hire from within. Obviously, Masai trusted Nurse more than, and had more knowledge on exactly how good Nurse was, but still, yeah, he showed us he was not his first choice. And then they go get Kawhi Leonard, and you think if maybe he has a redo, maybe he even keeps Dwayne Casey at that point, because then the core of this team has already changed enough that Casey, the only reason he was gone is because they couldn't change the core. But once they changed the core, maybe Casey would have been fine, but instead they've already gone to this guy who had not really shown us too much during the regular season. Of course, he only had Kawhi for 60 games, but this is it. You're right. This is the turning point for him.
Dude, Nick Nurse wasn't even the most popular fan choice from within the organization. It was Jerry Stackhouse.
Sure.
Like, fans really, really wanted it to be Jerry Stackhouse, who could eventually be a great coach, but Jerry Stackhouse is coaching at Vanderbilt, and Nick Nurse is an NBA champion. We can play out these scenarios, and it's fair to say, do you think the Raptors would win a championship with Casey? Well, maybe. Again, Kawhi Leonard has 11 35 or 30-point performances through 17 games. Maybe he was enough for this. But what I know is the Raptors have a championship with Nick Nurse. And what I know is that in a pivotal game five, Nick Nurse came up with his most impactful performance of the postseason. And yeah, again, played the Raptors lineup beautifully. Underrated story or player of the game. I had it as the Raptors defense in the fourth, but you put that as the main story, so I don't really think I can say that's underrated. But
I have Siakam's defense in particular, because he doesn't have a great offensive game and he has the two quick fouls, but three blocks, including a huge one on Giannis and a huge steal on Giannis in the fourth as well, and 13 boards for him. He was solid defensively.
Yeah. No, he plays a really good defensive game. He has a huge block. I love Siakam blocks because he likes to spike them. And so they're really, really entertaining, even if they're maybe not the most practical. But no, you're right. He plays a really, really solid defensive game in this one. And I was going to say the underrated storyline that we didn't discuss, maybe that we do here for two quick seconds, is Chris Middleton, man. Chrissy, what the hell happened, buddy? Chris Middleton has this game where he carries the Bucks, and you think he snapped out of the slump. And then he shoots 22% in this game. He's 2 of 9. And he has 10 assists, so it doesn't look as bad when you look at the box score, because he still has a double-double. But he doesn't have a double-double with points. He has 6 points. It's just he's ice cold again. It's a very weird playoff performance. And it's funny because the guy Chris Middleton was always compared to in this market was DeMar DeRozan. And there's some, I don't know if it's irony or what it is, but yeah, Chris Middleton turning into the Bucks version of playoff DeMar is, what's the word for it?
I don't know. Freaky Friday?
No. Yeah, it's just odd. He's terrible. He's really awful in this game.
Yeah, like, he is.
The two guys they built this team around, the two core pieces that they built around them in terms of money anyways, are Bledsoe and Middleton. And yeah, Middleton comes up with some plays in this game, but it's you don't want 6 points from a guy that's your all-star. I think that's pretty clear. It goes back to the Kyle Lowry thing where, like, all right, we can look at some things that make you good, but ultimately, are you supposed to be one of the best players? Okay, cool. You can't have 0 points.
No, and that's bad.
Yeah, and it goes with same with the six. And Eric Bledsoe has the 20, but he's 6 of 14 and he's 2 of 7 from three. Like, he takes 7 threes in this game because he hits his first one and he thinks that now all of a sudden he's a three-point shooter. And yeah, really, it's too much offensive burden on him because Middleton's not doing enough.
No, it's true. I also have an underrated storyline of this game. So the Raptors turn the ball over 4 times in the first 4 minutes. The start of this game is just, it looks like the Bucks are, they've had enough. They're not going to lose 3 in a row for the first time this season. They're back on home court. This is their best game. It feels like at that moment, at least, and the Raptors aren't up to the moment because they turn it over a bunch of times, 4 times in the first 4 minutes. They have 2 turnovers the rest of the way. The final 44 minutes of this game, they have 2 turnovers. They turn the ball over 6 total times in this game. It's wild.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up because, like, I didn't even notice that. And yeah. I knew about the 4 turnovers early, but I hadn't noticed that they only had 2 the rest of the way. Yeah, there's so many tiny little things. Maybe I'll save a couple of these for notable omissions. But last thing on the Bledsoe thing is just how much better is George Hill than Eric Bledsoe in this series?
Yeah, no, he's quite good.
Like, he's playing great terrifying defense
too. Right?
Yeah, it's like, and that's the thing.
You're not knocking Bledsoe's defense. I get it.
No,
in this game they announced the first team All-NBA defensive players, and I think he's there. But
right, no, dude, yeah, Eric
George
Bledsoe
Hill has some moments where he's playing great defense in this game too.
Right, that's it, dude. George Hill. People are very, very aware of his defense in this market coming into this game already because of the series against the Pacers, where he and Paul George just gave DeRozan and Lowry fits. Kind of one of the first moments of the Lowry DeRozan, these guys can't carry you in a playoff series offensively moments, because those two guys play great defense. I'm just saying, Bledsoe is clearly the better defender. He's elite at that position, but George Hill is just not that far off. And then just what he's giving you in the confidence with the spacing, it's just in the rebounding. It's like George Hill is just so good in the series. Is there a take you wish you had, or did you nail it?
No, I'm thinking back. So, like, I defended that moment as being the clincher, because I know it changes so much, but technically it's only a 1-point swing when Giannis is out. But I remember at the time just being apoplectic, or not apoplectic makes it feel like I felt bad about it, but I didn't. But just being like, my mind bent into a pretzel thinking about what Bud was thinking in the Giannis moment, the 30 seconds that Giannis doesn't play in this game, and that still holds up. Like, it's just so confusing, man. Like, you have timeouts. Like, even if you're down to your final timeout and you're loath to use it, it's hard to imagine a scenario that's more important than making sure that your MVP gets to play the entirety of the final last minute of a one possession basketball game. It's insane.
I totally agree. I think that it was an easy thing to nail that one, those two guys in that moment. But I'll say that I'm going to use hindsight here, and I think I had this at the time already in this series, but I'm not sure. I couldn't find a tweet about it, and I didn't dig through our show's archives. But I actually had a person DM me that I meant to get back to, and sorry I haven't if you're listening to this right now, and I haven't already. But he asked me, he's like, is there a way that you guys could go back and splice the takes from your old shows into this podcast? I was like, don't you think that would be a little confusing? Like, all of a sudden it's the same voices with completely different takes. Like, there's a music bed under this. Like, we want it's, and not only that, like, going and digging this up with the resources and the time. It's like, we can't really do that. We're doing a daily podcast, all right? We're doing weekend podcasts. How about just that? Yeah. How about just a weekend podcast? But it's just that game two is the best thing that ever happened to the Raptors. They got 23 shots in that game from Fred VanVleet, Serge, and Norm. They get blown out. Kawhi Leonard ends up limiting some of his minutes, and it probably helps him throughout the rest of the series. But just more that VanVleet, Serge, and Norm all become massive contributors in this thing. That it starts to unlock Norm Powell, which shows Nurse more faith. Like, they don't win this series without depth. Like, that's one thing the Bucks clearly have here, right? Like, I just mentioned it. George Hill is really good. Pat Connaughton makes a play every single one of these games. Their bigs are not good in this one. Like, Ilyasova and Mirotić don't really give them anything in this game. Those guys are basically just complete zeros. In fact, they actually both combine for a whole healthy 0 points. But throughout this series, the Bucks are pretty clearly a team that likes to play nine guys. Like, they're willing to go nine deep. And just, I don't think that the Raptors could have done the same thing that they did against the Sixers, because the Sixers also didn't have depth. Like, the Sixers were getting storylines like Greg Monroe helped save them for a couple of minutes. And James Ennis, who had been released by the Houston Rockets, was giving them some productive minutes. And that they desperately needed Mike Scott to come back. That isn't the case in this series against the Bucks. The Raptors needed it. And I'm not sure if they ever get there if it's a more competitive game too, and they're forced to just kind of stick with one of these short rotations. We never see Fred VanVleet. Like, it's just, it's a huge rabbit hole moment, or what do you call it? A what if moment. Yeah, exactly. Butterfly moment. Game two. The time, it just seemed like the worst thing, and it's one of those things where it's like you're a nerd in high school, but you're smart, and they're like, "Listen, this is going to be hard for you now, but eventually it's going to pay off. You keep doing your homework.
Yeah,
it's going to pay off down the line, kid.
Yeah, good job getting blown out in game two, Raptors. Yeah, another take that might have emerged from this thing is that the Raptors, they've allowed Kawhi Leonard to progress to something he'd never been before in his career. Because earlier in this postseason, we're talking about Kawhi. I mean, he's still getting it done, and the percentages are still relatively high outside of that Game 7 against the Sixers, but he's not a playmaker, right? Like, he's just not. That's the one missing element in his game. And he has 9 assists in this game. Mm-hmm. He's dishing it all over the place. Now, part of it is that everybody's hitting, and specifically,
I was going to say that Fred VanVleet hit 7 threes, and he's probably assisted on 5 of those from Kawhi.
Yeah, that's helpful. But that is something we see evolve for Kawhi. And even during the regular season this year against the Clippers, you were starting to see more of it from him. Whereas, you know, before this playoff series, it was really not much a part of his arsenal.
Notable omissions.
Let's see. Oh yeah, Bud went back and forth with Drake before this game. He got goaded into a quote about Drake. There's certainly no place for fans or whatever Drake is for the Raptors on the court. There's boundaries and lines for a reason. You want to give another edge to Nick Nurse and the coaching battle? It's the public comment stuff, because he just totally downplayed the Drake thing. He's like, yeah, I didn't even notice it. Who cares? Not a big deal. And here is Bud just adding a little fuel to the fire. Just shut up. Just shut up. But he didn't.
Other than when it comes to traffic or subways, has anyone ever said there's borders or lines for a reason and not been the hugest nerd who ever lived?
No, that's right.
Like, there's boundaries and lines for a reason. It's reading that quote is so terrible. And yeah, you really don't want it, especially since, Okay, so yeah, Drake does something different from Gucci Mane, but yeah, those two guys going back and forth in this series, essentially. Gucci trying to be Milwaukee's version of Drake with a lot of histrionics, a lot of walking up and down the sideline in this game, a lot of standing up during Bucks threes, which I encourage, just being a fan, but it's always hard for me not to just be pessimistic sometimes when, yeah, you end up getting a lot of free attention in these series by, like, I always wonder, is it worth it for media figures like that to pay for courtside seats, like whatever the cost is it not worth the price of advertising for them?
For sure.
Yeah, exactly, right? So anyway, Gucci is really trying hard. And then meanwhile, Drake is back at Jurassic Park with the stage. This is the birth of the Drake stage, where he and his friends are up on stage watching TV, and the rest of the people are down below and watching Drake on a stage.
Kind of, like, in retrospect, kind of cowardly. Like, don't you have to make the trip? Don't you have to show up? Because Gucci was in Toronto, right? And, like, he was obviously not making the same type of headlines and not being reprimanded by the league to
no, that's I like it. Listen, I kind of like your angle here. I just think that Drake is so much about Toronto that him being in the six and him being in the square, it resonates a little differently than Gucci Mane, especially since it's like, oh yeah, you're a Bucks fan now. Like, oh, that's cool. I guess, like, you're since when really? And speaking of that, the cameos in Milwaukee in this game, like Aaron Rodgers is there.
Yeah, and the beer chugging meme from Aaron Rodgers, where David Bakhtiari just fills him in the beer chugging competition.
But this is a moment where a lot of us in the sports world took some time and said, wow, is there anywhere you'd rather be than Wisconsin? They have Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback. He just signed that extension. You have Giannis Antetokounmpo with a couple more seasons and in the NBA Eastern Conference Finals right now, potentially going to the NBA Finals in this game. And you have Christian Yelich, who's the NL MVP. It really looks like Wisconsin is riding high. And yeah, little do they know, is like, there's going to be an injury to Yelich that really hurt them. Aaron Rodgers aged very quickly, even though he killed my Seahawks first. And Giannis Antetokounmpo, if the season is canceled, is only going to play one more year in Milwaukee. That's going to be potentially a walk year. It just, things change real quickly in the world of sports, buddy. It's just, it can shift pretty fast.
Yeah. Also, just a notable omission. So Giannis is actually 2 of 3 from three in this game, and he hits a huge one actually in the fourth quarter. Massive three. But and even with him shooting 2 of 3 from three, they're 10 of 31 for 32%. So you take that out of it, and the Bucks are actually 8 of 28 from three. He's also the only guy that misses free throws in this game. He's 4 of 9 again. I mean, this is just, it's an ongoing story throughout this game, but everybody else is perfect, including Bledsoe, 6 of 6, but only four guys attempt him. They were just a horrible 3-point shooting game for the Bucks.
Yeah, he is compared to being baby Shaq sometimes because of his dominance inside. There's no one that is compared to Shaq quite like Giannis within the restricted area since Shaquille O'Neal. And yeah, it was the free throws are probably something that you didn't want to come along with it. I had a moment where I thought that it was going to be the underrated story of the game. But yeah, it's that second quarter, right, where the Raptors and Bucks both can't score. But the difference is that the Raptors are basically funneling their offense through Siakam from three, whereas the Bucks are getting clean looks from their wide-open shooters, and they go over 5 minutes without a field goal and put together a stretch where they go 1 of 14 from the floor. Yeah, the Bucks secondary guys really hurt them in this game that are not named Malcolm Brogdon or early game Eric Bledsoe. You're right. They're a three-point shooting team. They're built around that. It's a high-variant shot. And we've seen this with the Raptors before too, right? Where it's like nothing goes in. But yeah, if you're a Bucks fan, that's certainly how you feel about it. And like, speaking of that, too much Siakam 3-point shooting in this game. Mm-hmm. I like that he's shooting threes. I like that he's trying to add that to his arsenal. And everyone doesn't mind it when it's a corner three, especially because I think he shot 40% from there during the NBA's regular season. But it's a lot of Pascal Siakam for three. You're like, seven is too many. Seven Siakam threes is probably too many, even though he did hit five.
And also, then, this is shocking. How many assists do you think Marc Gasol had in this game?
I think Marc Gasol has – he doesn't have very many assists in this game.
He has zero. He has zero assists. Like, how many games are you going to watch when Marc Gasol has zero assists? And he played 29 minutes, but zero assists.
He and Serge Ibaka do not have very good offensive games. Like, Ibaka is having trouble finishing around the rim. He misses his 18-footer that, like, normally is his sweet spot. He doesn't have very much offensively. It's just both guys, just their primary function, yes, is that they score inside. But Gasol is a criminal offender of, like, coming off of his best offensive game of the playoffs, for him to just revert all the way back to, like, I don't want to shoot mode was pretty frustrating after he sees a couple of in-and-out threes early in the game.
I mean, he was part of that incredible defense on Giannis again.
Yep.
And that, to me, is the story of this game, just how well they build that wall and how
but
they
he's passive. The paint. But he's yeah, passive he has, offensively
no,
in this game.
No doubt. Offense, not his best game.
Okay. So, game six. Game six tomorrow, and then it's off to the NBA Finals.
Yay.
I mean, oh, spoiler alert.
I've already got my favorite moment of game six.
It's not gonna be hard. Again, thanks to everybody who's retweeting, thanks to everybody who's sharing, even if you're just telling a friend, even if you're just texting a friend, if you're following along, you listen to parts of these, however it is you're consuming, we appreciate it a lot, and we'll catch you tomorrow. Thanks again.